taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday Americans.
What is liberty? In its most general form, liberty is freedom from restraint, freedom from outside influence. When you're not physically confined or your mind is not checked or controlled, that is the ultimate liberty. Now, we actually put some constraints on liberty, right? Because there are things that, you know, absolute liberty means, well, there's no restraint from you saying going out and killing your neighbor. So we have natural liberty, where your liberty is restrained by natural law. What I like to summarize is we don't hurt people, we don't take their stuff. But even is that enough in a civil society? Are there laws that are necessary to constrain our liberty because they are necessary for the safety of the state or the society as a whole? We refer to that as civil liberty, and that is primarily what I believe our framers were considering when they used the term liberty in things like the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution and early laws of this country. It's the general idea that you should go about your life without restraint, without external influence, except what is necessary to maintain the safety and security of the state and society as a whole. But what happens when governments go beyond that? When government tells you how to live your life, when government controls more and more, pretty much every aspect of your life, what happens then? Well, I want to welcome you, everyday Americans, to the Constitution Study heard on the America Out Loud Network. This is Paul Engel, and those are exactly the types of questions I want to talk about today. This idea of what happens when government controls pretty much every aspect of our lives. We're seeing it more and more, and I want to spend a little time looking at the news and some of the more recent examples and what that means for liberty and freedom in America. Well, for example, Joe Biden just signed a law making lynching a federal hate crime. Now, don't get me wrong. There is no way I would consider myself pro-lynching. Certainly not. But there are quite a few issues, not just with the legislation that the president signed, but with the law it is based on. You see, the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, I believe is the name of it. Yeah, the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act actually adds language to Title 18, Section 249A of the United States Code. And what they define as lynching. So I'm reading the Emmett Till Act. It says lynching. Whoever conspires to commit any offense under paragraph 1, 2, or 3 shall, if death or serious bodily injury, as defined in Section 2246 of this art title, results from the offense, be imprisoned not more than 30 years, fined in accordance with this title, or both. So basically, the whole headline that I read about this being an anti-lynching bill is hogwash. What it basically is saying is, listen, if you commit a crime, now, Section 249A of Title 18 deals with offenses involving actual or perceived race, color, religion, or national origin. Now, again, I don't think people should be targeted because of their race, color, religion, or national origin. But I have one serious problem. First of all, lynching is not mentioned either in the new legislation or in the existing language of Section 249A. So I don't see how you can call this a lynching bill. I'm sorry, they do call it lynching, but the lynching they refer to it as lynching, but they never mention, they never actually say, okay, if you lynch someone, then you get punished. Yeah, it's meant to be emotional language. There is no special punishment for lynching. What they do create is special punishments if you cause death or serious bodily injury because of either actual or perceived race, color, religion, sexual orientation. But you see, there's just one itty-bitty little problem. Well, actually, there's two problems. There's two big ones. Let's start with the second problem first. They refer to these as hate crimes. I'm sorry, but if you commit or conspire to cause death or serious bodily injury, hatred because of a person's, that's pretty much hatred, yeah. In fact, many of the crimes we deal with, physical crimes, violent crimes, are acts of hatred. So if a person walks up on the street and beats two men to death, should they get punished more for one than the other simply because of the color of their skin? If it is wrong to cause death or serious bodily injury, to conspire to cause death or serious bodily injury, why is it different if the other person is a different race or a different religion or a different national origin? See, this idea of hate crimes is simply, it's divisive language. If what you did was illegal, it's illegal punishment, which means you do not get equal protection under the law. Does that sound fair? Now, but those of you who jump right to the 14th Amendment says, you cannot have, you have to protect equal protection of the laws, but that's applied specifically to states. It says, no state shall make or enforce any law which, among other things, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. So that's a state-level issue. We're dealing with a federal-level issue, which brings me to the other serious problem here. This law is void. It's not me saying that. It's the Supreme Court in Marbury versus Madison. It's Alexander Hamilton, Federalist Papers number 78, because this law is not enacting a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution. See, this law isn't limited to federal property. So Congress has no legislative authority to do this. It doesn't involve interstate commerce. It doesn't involve foreign commerce. This is a domestic crime that, if limited to a single state, is not a federal issue. It's Title 18, Section 249. They call Hate Crime Acts. Is void. Because as much as we may detest these crimes, whether they be crimes from lynching in the civil rights era, to attacks on homosexuals, to attacks on Muslims or on Vietnamese or other foreigners or Christians or Buddhists or Jews, regardless of how vile and hateful they are not federal issues. They are state issues. But you see, the problem is optics. See, if a state turns around and says, the federal government doesn't have the authority to enforce this law. Oh, you're for hate crimes? No. I'm for the states dealing with their hate crimes. I'm with the federal government doing only what it's legally allowed to do. See, I'm with the Constitution of the United States. And the 10th Amendment says that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution generally remain with the states. So we once again have the federal government taking a broad, we're going to tell everybody how to live their lives, because the states and the people are afraid to stand up and say, excuse me, Washington, we didn't delegate to you that authority. Section 249, Title 18, Section 249 is a power we did not delegate to you. Therefore, it's invalid. And in fact, by taking someone into custody for an invalid law, you are the one you are committing a crime. But Paul, I know it sounds, at first you think it sounds bad. So I start off with, I'm not for crimes against people for any reason. To conspire or commit acts that involve death or serious bodily injury, except in your own self-defense or the defense of innocent bystanders, is wrong. But that doesn't mean we need to make it a federal case. Because all that does is give us a more and more powerful federal government to rule more and more over our lives. For example, it appears the Biden administration is quietly discontinuing the releasing of offshore drilling leases. You see, according to the Biden's recent budget framework, they're not going to hold any sales for offshore drilling leases, at least for another 18 months. Now, think about that the next time you go to fill up your car at the gas station and you swear at how high the price of gasoline has gotten. They don't want to let people go and drill for oil offshore. Which, of course, brings up another question. Why is the federal government even involved in offshore, in leasing drilling rights offshore? Is that a power delegated to the United States? No. Is that in the list under Article 1, Section 8 of the lands that and buildings that Congress has legislative control over? No. I mean, the question of drilling offshore is a question for the state that the drilling is offshore from, not the federal government. But once again, we have states that are just, you know, they've been cowed into doing whatever the federal government says. The federal government says, oh, that's our land. We get to control it now. No, we didn't authorize that. Go pound sand. But because we have decades and decades of letting the federal government do these types of things, we shouldn't be surprised when they keep doing it. And if that level of arrogance and hypocrisy isn't enough, this same Biden administration is asking Congress to punish oil companies for not drilling more. So at the same time that the Biden administration seems to be pulling back on selling leases, they want to punish companies that are not using the leases, well, the way the Biden administration thinks. Now, remember, just because the federal government sells a lease for a piece of land doesn't mean the land has significant amounts of oil, doesn't take consideration the cost of producing oil on that land. And let's face it, when it comes to figuring out how things should work, the federal government is terrible at it. So, but in Biden's mind, apparently, according to a fact sheet, today President Biden is calling on Congress to make companies pay fees on wells from their leases that they haven't used in years and on acres of public lands that they are hoarding without producing. How do you know that? How do you know that it's just, you know what? There isn't oil there. There's no guarantee that there's oil just because you say so. You got to drill and find out is it actually there. And have you ever found out why they're not producing oil? Could it be that these companies are hesitant to invest in producing wells on that leased land because they're not sure if this president is going to turn around and revoke their leases? See, this is what happens when we put a government in control of every part of our lives. They turn around and say, yep, we're going to decide where and when you're going to be able to drill, and we're going to decide, you know, what leases and permits you're going to get. Then we're going to complain if you don't do it the way we want, whether or not it meets the facts or not. I mean, this is just another example of this idea of, well, if I say it's true, and the universe will magically change to fix that. So while we're dealing with high gas prices, while the president's complaining that, well, they're not putting producing oil on these leases the way we think they should, what is his solution? To release was it, 1 million barrels of oil a day from the Strategic National Reserve for the next 6 months. Yeah, it's going to release about 180 million barrels of oil. And that's a lot, right? He's talking 1 million barrels a day. That sounds like a lot until you realize that last year, America's consumed more than 20 million barrels of oil a day. So 1 million barrels a day is a drop in the bucket. Now, will it have some short-term impact on oil futures? Probably. But remember, that oil was set aside for us to use in a national emergency. We're not talking about an economic hardship. We're talking about war. We're talking about natural disaster. We're talking about situations where we need that oil. And don't forget, for every barrel of oil that the president lets out of the strategic reserve, sooner or later, they're going to have to buy to put back in the strategic reserve. Again, another short-term gain for a long-term problem. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, listen, I am looking for questions to answer on the radio program. I want to do another Q&A segment. You can find out more. Go to constitutionstudy.com, find the Ask a Question button, put your question in, just check the box that says you want me to answer it on the radio. I am putting them together to do that right here. If you do that for me, I would appreciate it greatly. Also, be sure to share the news. You can listen to the Constitution Study 4 p.m. Eastern Time every weekday on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. We also have some awesome apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa, or you can listen on our media player from the web browser anywhere in the world. Just go to the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.com. You'll find all the links. And be sure to check out the show page for the Constitution Study for a copy of my previous episodes.
Along with a healthy immune system, clean air is vital for optimal health. According to the EPA, we spend 90% of our time indoors, where germs are most concentrated. It's essential to clean indoor air. Genesis is the only technology that quickly, safely, and effectively kills pathogens both in the air and on surfaces in seconds, reducing the viral load in any environment. The powerful, well-built Genesis fogger produces a dry, ultra-fine mist using HOCL, which occurs naturally in our own immune systems. We'll be living with airborne diseases in the future. New viruses and antibiotic-resistant superbugs are no problem for Genesis. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next. Visit GenesisFogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at GenesisFogger.com/OUTLOUD.
Now the spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today we're talking about government control of our lives. There's an old saying that's, he who pays the piper calls a tune. Well, apparently, back on March 11th, the Biden administration's Department of Education announced a new regulatory proposal about the use of federal funds for public charter schools. Surprise, surprise, they want to put more restrictions on the disbursements of funding going to charter schools. Now, that's, like I said, he who pays the piper. When people are dependent on government funding, the government gets to call the tunes. And again, I'm not surprised, right? Because so many in the government, especially in the Democratic Party, seem to be so enamored with the teachers' unions, and the teachers' unions hate charter schools because A, they tend to do things cheaper, B, they have better outcomes, and see, they show that the unions cause more problems than they fix in many cases when it comes to the school system. But this is just another example of what you see what happens when we allow government to take control. Remember, there's nothing in the Constitution of the United States that allows the federal government to be involved in education, period. The Federal Department of Education is, the act that created it is void. It is empty. It is meaningless. It is literally a criminal organization because it is violating the laws of the United States. But yet here we are. They're doling out your money. They're collecting money. They're taking their cut off the top. They are doling that back to you. And now they're saying, because we dole out the money, we're going to tell you what to do with it. I haven't gotten into the details of what these restrictions are. I really don't care. It's one more reason to show why, if you are involved in a private school or any charter school, anything like that, you want to avoid as much public money as possible, especially from the federal government, because they will use it to extort you to do what they want. You see, all the things I was talking about in the first segment, we were showing about how the states don't know what the Constitution says, the people don't know what the Constitution says. That's because most of them went to public schools, and the public schools don't teach what the Constitution actually says. It's not just public schools, by the way. I've asked lawyers for years when they were in law school, did they study the Constitution or constitutional law? And I've had one man tell me he studied the Constitution. Almost everybody said, no, we studied the constitutional law, which is a judge's opinion about a judge's opinion about a judge's opinion about what the Constitution should have meant. So this is the type of mess that we get into when we allow governments to do what they're not authorized to do. When we submit voluntarily to the criminal acts of government. Well, Paul, it's not voluntary. We have to do it. No, you don't. The ability to say no. The ability to look and say, here, the Constitution says you are not authorized to do this. This is wrong. This is illegal. No, I will not comply, is a powerful motivator. It's a powerful entity. But it's not just the federal government that is doing this. Again, schools are primarily state controlled. The federal influence is illegal, but the state influence is not, which is why you shouldn't be surprised when we see some of the craziness coming out of our state-controlled school systems. I mean, sure, we used to call them public schools, and some people still do, but these are government schools. So what's going on in our government schools? Well, in the state of California, they've decided they're going to provide free menstrual products in the restroom. All right, really, it's just one more thing that people need to get paid for, but no, that's not the bad part. That's not the part that gets me. They're going to be putting them in the boys' room. That's right. 6th through 12th grade will now have free menstrual products in the restroom, including the boys' room. All because of AB 367, called the Menstrual Equality Act of 2021. Now, I don't know about you, but imagine wasting your time putting menstrual products in the boys' room. The time and money is pitiful. But what are we teaching? What is California teaching children in the cesspool they call public schools, in the government cesspools? That, what, just because you think you're a boy, we need to give you menstrual products in the boys' room because even though you think you're a boy, your body still menstruates? Or is it because just because you're a boy and you think you're a girl, but you're not confused, so you're in the boys' room? This is pandering. This is pandering to a tiny minority of actually confused people, but it's worse than that because it is indoctrination. It is an attempt to groom our children into believing that boys can menstruate, that you can't tell the difference between a boy and a girl. Men and women are exactly the same. There is no difference. This is the government turning your children into idiots. Because let's face it, if you cannot teach the most basic concepts of biology, boys and girls, men and women, and the fact that men don't menstruate. Boys don't menstruate. Women do. It's part of the reproductive process. You spent decades beating into our heads that we have to have programs to teach the facts about sex and reproduction. Well, here it is right in front of you, ladies and gentlemen. Boys don't menstruate. They don't need pads. They don't need tampons. The girls do. And if there's somebody in the boys' room that needs menstrual products, they're not a boy. We've gone completely crazy. We've allowed a tiny minority of people, not even those who actually are confused or have true gender dysphoria, but an agenda to break down everything in society. And if you're in California, your government is teaching your children to do that. Or how about the case of a Texas high school teacher that's going to pay a former student $90,000 because he gave them an incomplete for not finishing a homework assignment? That homework assignment? To write out the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, the student, Mary Oliver, refused to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, yeah. Freedom of speech. I don't have a problem with, as long as they don't disturb the class, I don't really have a problem with it. If you don't want to say the Pledge of Allegiance, if you don't think that the red, white, and blue, the stars and stripes, represent the greatest country in history, that's your opinion. You're free to have it. Now, the teacher gave an assignment to write out the Pledge of Allegiance. Ms. Oliver didn't, therefore she got an incomplete and started this whole litigation. Now, this is interesting because Jeffrey Blackwell, who's a litigation counsel at American Atheist, said, "The classroom is not a pulpit. It is a place of education, not indoctrination." Well, since he is a litigation counsel, let me point him to Title 4, Section 4 of the United States Code, titled Pledge of Allegiance to the Flag, Manner of Delivery. And it says, "The Pledge of Allegiance to the Flag, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all," close quote, "should be rendered by standing at attention, facing the flag with the right hand over the heart. When not in uniform, men should remove any non-religious headdress with their right hand and hold it at their left shoulder, the hand being over the heart. Persons in uniform should remain silent, face the flag, and render the military salute. Members of the armed forces not in uniform and veterans may render the military salute in the manner provided for persons in uniform." That's federal law. So apparently, American Atheist litigator believes that federal law is religious. That's indoctrination to say, hey, the Pledge of Allegiance, it is part of federal law. Now, I'm not saying that you have to actually pledge allegiance to the flag. I agree that that person should be forced to pledge allegiance. But again, it's federal law. Shouldn't somebody be expected to be able to, quote it? Being it's such a part of the, it's such a part of our national history and understanding, is it really asking that much for a student who, again, I'm not saying should be forced to recite it, but to be able to put it down in a history, in a homework assignment from school? Apparently that's just asking too much, because this case has gone on for years. This began in 2017. We're talking almost 5 years ago. And now a high school teacher is going to spend $90,000 just to be done with it. Now, according to the story, there is one part where I think the teacher went too far. See, apparently when this teacher told Benji Arnold, submitted the class to the assignment to the class, he said they didn't submit the assignment in whole. They would receive a zero, comparing anyone who didn't to Soviet communists, members of the Islamic faith seeking to impose Sharia law, and those who condone pedophilia. Yeah, all right, that was too far. That was too far. But again, Oliver, who had for months declined to say the pledge because it had the phrase "under God." I don't have a problem with that. Legally, I think it's misguided, but okay, you don't want to say it, that's fine. But does that mean you don't have to write it down for a homework assignment? See, too often in our schools, our government-run schools, our children are not being taught to be citizens. In many ways, they're taught to hate critical parts of our nation, our country. And again, I'm not saying we should all be forced to stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. When I was in school, we said the Pledge of Allegiance. And the understanding was, either for the entire pledge or for the words "under God," you did not have to recite that. But you were expected to stand respectfully to the others who wished to do so. You didn't have to recite it. You didn't have to pledge. You didn't have to put your hand over your heart. But you're expected to stand respectful of the others who were pledging allegiance. And now we have a teacher. Now, granted, I think the teacher was foolish. But as a part of civics, to me, writing down, having the Pledge of Allegiance is like memorizing the preamble to the Constitution. It's those foundational things that help us understand. But that doesn't appear what we want in schools, or at least what government schools are all about today. They seem much more interested in providing menstrual products for boys. They seem much more interested in whether or not they're going to teach in person. And again, this isn't all teachers. I've known some truly wonderful teachers in my life. Sometimes they were teachers in schools in my schools. Others are people I've met afterwards that they want to teach. That is their heart's desire. But I think the system as a whole has in many ways broken down because parents have turned education over to the government. We decided at age 5, we're just going to hand our kids off to government and let government educate them. And too often, parents spend precious little, if any, time looking over what is actually being taught to their children. And then they sit back in shock with some of the ideas their kids come home with. Well, where do you think they're getting these ideas? See, if we are at liberty, that means as parents, we should be overseeing the education of our children. My wife and I thought so seriously about this that we homeschooled our daughter for her entire primary and secondary education. The only time she went to a government school was, well, she went to take standardized tests, and she went when the day camp she attended taught swimming lessons in the high school swimming pool. Other than that, she wasn't in a school. And she, by the way, still scored higher than most students in the state on those standardized tests. She was always in the 90-plus percentile, usually in the 98th percentile or higher. But it was important to us to oversee our daughter's education. It was important for us to control what she was exposed to and make sure that she was emotionally capable of dealing with things when she was exposed to them. We didn't, some people thought, maybe she was sequestered. No, our daughter was one of the most socially adept people you'll ever meet. She had no problem dealing with adults, with children. But not everybody is in a position to homeschool. I understand that. But you have to ask yourself, how important is your child's education? How important is it to you that they get a good education? I mean, sure, we've got all the jokes about, kids who can't make change. and the other failures of our school. We have all the reports about illiteracy, reading illiteracy, math illiteracy. We've talked here multiple times about civic illiteracy from our government-run schools. But that's what happens when we turn education over to government, when we put them in charge. Because if he who pays the piper calls the tune, then the education your children are getting is not being decided by you. It's not being decided by your teachers. It's not probably being decided even by your principal. Maybe by your school board, probably by your state, and most definitely by multiple special interest groups. Which is why I spend as much time as I can teaching children about the Constitution, about their rights, and about freedom. Now, I have to take another break, but before I do, I have good news for you. Immune Super Boost is finally back in stock, and now Healthy Cell is offering you the ultimate immune boosting package. Buy Immune Super Boost by August 7th, and all of our listeners will get a free package of AC11, the DNA repair. Just use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. By the way, try their other products. My wife loves their REM sleep. Helps her get to sleep at night. And you'll still get 20% off your first order. Just remember to use that code out loud at checkout.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
You've been in that situation. The person next to you is sniffling, or worse yet, coughing. Flu, cold, and SARS-CoV-2 are everywhere. Would you like an additional layer of protection to reduce these threats with an invisible mask? Sold by hundreds of pharmacists and medical doctors, our American-made povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray, Cofix RX, lasts for hours deactivating viruses and germs that make us sick. Find a retailer near you or buy online at CofixRx.com. America Out Loud listeners use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. You know, you may be wondering, Paul, why did you spend the last segment talking simply about schools and government control over schools? Well, there's one thing I've observed as I look at the root cause, what I believe to be the root cause of a lot of the reasons we have these out-of-control governments comes from education. A lot of people see a lot of problems in governments, and they have a lot of ideas to fix them. But I believe if we go all the way back down to the root cause, it's a lack of education. We don't understand the Constitution. We don't understand the role of government. We don't understand the limits we can place, that we have the power we have over government. And a lot of that, I believe, comes from the fact that, well, most of us went to government-run schools where, surprise, surprise, the government-run schools don't teach you that you're in charge of government, not the other way around. So I focus a lot on what goes on in schools. As I said, I spend as much time as I can speaking to students. I've got, I'm putting together a list of homeschool conferences I'm going to, because homeschoolers are more open to this idea of studying the actual Constitution. But I'll go to other schools. I speak to college groups. I speak to school, public school groups, private school groups. To me, it's that important, because there are a lot of issues in the public schools. Now, when I went to public school, granted, this was decades ago. This is back in the 60s and 70s that I went to public school. Things were a lot different. Now, there's a big debate going on right now with some Florida legislation that Governor DeSantis has signed that basically they call it an anti-grooming bill. Well, all right, a lot of people call it the Don't Say Gay bill, but that's just propaganda. That's just a lie. I've read the legislation. It says nothing about saying gay. What it says is you can't have sexual content being promoted to children between kindergarten and 12th and third grade, and that any information you do provide must be age appropriate. Now, you know, there are some people saying, well, gee, we don't need that. Well, wait a second here. See, there was an MSNBC interview, and it has since gone viral, in which a Florida kindergarten teacher says he is hurt after the governor signed this anti-grooming bill. This man said, personally, my kids do have questions. They want to know who my partner is in pictures outside my classroom, and I should be able to speak to that. He says, that's what we do as educators. We build relationships with our kids, and in order to build relationships, you talk about home life, you talk about what you do on weekends. That's building community. It scares me to death that I'm not going to be able to have these conversations with my children because they're going to ask me what I did on the weekend. All right. One of my best friends back when I lived in New York was a teacher. And I've met many teachers, and he taught troubled youth. He worked at a school for troubled youth. He dealt with young men that came from really broken home lives. And you know what? One of the things that he used to do was he would take pictures. He was always had his camera going. He'd take pictures about life so he could show them what a home life should look like. Or at least what the best possible home life should look like. Now, it's one thing for you to say, well, yeah, you know, here's, hello, my name is Steve, and yeah, this is my partner, this is George. I don't think the bill says you can't name your partner if it happens to be the same sex. Now, the law does read classroom instruction by school personnel or third parties on sexual orientation or gender identity may not occur in kindergarten through third grade or in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards. It's not about a question of what you did over the weekend. It's instruction. It's grooming. Now, I don't know, maybe this teacher didn't actually read the bill. I've heard a lot of people say a lot of stupid things because they're listening to the media rather than reading the bill. But let me ask you this. Do you really want your kindergartner, do you really want your child's kindergarten teacher to teach them about sex, about sexual orientation, about anything like that? Do you want them to teach about gender identity or other things in kindergarten? Again, we're not talking about what the teacher did this weekend. We're talking about classroom instruction that involves discussing sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, the sad part is we need laws like this because we have teachers like this that wish to enter their own sexual preferences, their worldview, to override what the parents are being, what the parents want. Now, no one said this kindergarten teacher couldn't teach. All they said is they couldn't provide instruction on sexual orientation and gender identity. And that bothers him. It bothers me that it bothers him. It bothers me that there are people who think it's appropriate to teach kindergartners about sex. It bothers me that these buffoons, these people who play make-believe for a living, all of these celebrities making all these outrageous statements because they apparently are too ignorant to bother reading the bill. to find out that it isn't a don't say gay bill. It says don't groom children to be gay. Yes, that it does say. But the fact that we need such legislation should give you a clue as to just how depraved our society has become, especially in our government-run schools. Or what about this video that's been floating around? It's from Accuracy in Media, and it shows multiple school officials in Idaho discussing how the neo-Marxist ideology can be taught to students without officially being labeled as critical race theory. You see, there's a state law outlawing teaching the ideas aligned with CRT by public educators. But as I've said before, a law means nothing unless it's enforced. So the representatives of the people in Idaho passed a law and said, listen, in schools, we don't want you teaching ideas aligned with CRT. Oh, we'll figure out how we can get around that. How they can teach those principles without officially labeling them CRT theory, you know, critical race theory, in order to get around the law. See, they do want to teach your children to be Marxists. They want them to be socialists. They want them to be communists. They want them to be subjects. See, while speaking with Mark Jones of the Boise School District, the Accountability and Media president asked whether educators could teach tenets associated with CRT, but under the guise of equity or something else. To which Jones affirmed and further explained part of the district's strategy or strategic plan deals with equity. And I bet the idiot MAGA crowd just ignores it because it doesn't have the critical race theory name on it, right? The teacher said, I hope so. See, the schools are trying to get around the law to indoctrinate your children to be Marxists, not capitalists, not free people, not libertarians, no, Marxists. Others are teaching the CRT project, which has been found to be historically inaccurate at best. It's a false American history. Yet they're still teaching it because it's associated with these same Marxist ideas of divide and conquer. One official said, there's some really great free history resources out there. There's just a lot of pushback on the 1619 project. So we've had to say, right now, we can't. See, they want to teach that, but they have to move it underground. And these are the people that are teaching your children. Or what about the Washington State School District that created what they call a culturally responsive student discipline policy. Now, there's a lot in that we could probably unwrap. But the idea, as I understand it, is to have a culturally responsive discipline policy to deal with the cultural competency, which, according to a fact sheet, says cultural competency includes knowledge of students' cultural histories and contexts, as well as family norms and values in different cultures, knowledge and skills in accessing community resources and community and parent outreach, and skills in adapting instruction to students' experience and identifying cultural context for individual students. I'm listening to that, and I'm not quite following where they're going. What it sounds to me is they're going to judge the discipline based on family life, based on cultural norms. And who's defined what those cultural norms are? And why are they race-based? Are they ethnic-based? I have a question. Why don't we just have norms that the Americans want to uphold? You know, we set rules and there are discipline for the rules, and that discipline should be associated with the infraction. The discipline should be the conduct we want to have happen. The discipline for violating it should be commensurate with what we're actually, you know, the actual violation. Now, they say it's not race-based, but I'm sorry, it sounds dubious at best. Now, in amongst all of this, I found this article. This one actually came out of the Tennessee Star. The Tennessee House passes a bill requiring high school students to learn virtues of capitalism and the U.S. Constitutional Republic. This is HB 2742. So if you live in Tennessee, ask your representative and their senator where they stand on HB 2742. It requires that high school students be taught the virtues of capitalism and the constitutional republic form of government in the United States and Tennessee as compared to other political and economic systems such as communism and socialism as part of the social studies curriculum. Now, I like this. I like this for a few reasons. You see, look at all the examples we've talked about already today where the idea of the constitutional republic, of capitalism, of justice is being twisted and perverted into something weird, something different. Here we have in Tennessee a bill that is so far has passed the House, hasn't passed the Senate yet, I don't believe, certainly hasn't been signed into law, that says at least the students will be taught about capitalism, about a constitutional republic. Notice they didn't say a democracy. They said a constitutional republic form of government in the United States and Tennessee. This is a good start. There are possibilities. Now, this legislation is still moving through the system. And again, it's just Tennessee and it may get changed. I'm not betting the farm that government will fix the problem. We, the people, should be fixing the problem. Parents should be in charge of overseeing the education of our children. And we, the people, need to regain control of our creations. That being the governments of the states, that being the United States. We created them. We need to be responsible for them. We need to understand their boundaries of their power, the powers that we've given them. And when they violate that, we need to punish them. Whether it's by removal from office, by impeachment, by any one of a bunch of legal mechanisms. The Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land. The Constitution of Tennessee is the supreme law of the state under the Constitution of the United States. We need to begin applying them. But you can't apply them if you don't know what they say. So it's important that we all learn the basic fundamental understanding of the Constitution. Now, maybe you've tried reading the Constitution and you just don't get it. Or maybe there's something in there that just doesn't quite click. Or you've taken a class or you've read a book and it just isn't fitting. It isn't making sense. Well, let me offer you something. See, I'm still doing my online Constitution study where we join together online on a Zoom call. We read the Constitution, we study it, we discuss it, we debate it. And you can try it. You can actually get the class we did on the Bill of Rights. It's three classes, absolutely free. Just go to constitutionstudy.com/study. You can find out more. Follow the link. You can try the study for the Bill of Rights, those first three lessons, absolutely free. If you want to join us, there's information on how to do that there as well. But this is so that we can get together and we, the people, can read and study the Constitution. It's also a great opportunity to teach the rising generation to be free. As I've said, I'm scheduling homeschool conferences because I get a lot more traction with homeschoolers than I do with others. But you can check the website, go to constitutionstudy.com. There's a conferences page. You can see what conferences I'll be speaking at. I'm still working on my tour. So go to constitutionstudy.com/tour. You can go to you can see where I'm going to be. You can invite me to come speak at your event. I'll come speak to your group, to your event. It doesn't need to be a big, huge event. It can just be a bunch of people in some room somewhere that are really interested in learning more about the Constitution. We don't need the government schools to teach it. We don't need fancy, expensive curriculums. We don't need a college degree. All we really need is the ability and the willingness to read and study a document that was designed so that an 18th century farmer could understand it. It's all there. It's all possible. But we have to do some of the work. You know, we've inherited a great prize, our liberty and our freedom. But they did not come free. And we will not retain them unless we do the work to make sure that we educate ourselves and that we educate the next generation. Now, do me a favor, make AmericaOutLoud.com your daily stop for the latest news and happenings. We should all do our part to share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, so that we can help spread the blessings of liberty.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.